Welcome to This Month in Muscular Dystrophy. I'm Kevin Flanagan from the Center for Gene Therapy at Nationwide Children's Hospital in Columbus, Ohio. Each month on this podcast, we invite authors of recent publications to discuss how their work improves our understanding of inherited neuromuscular diseases and what their work might mean for treatment of these diseases. Today, it's my great pleasure to invite as our guest Dr. Valerie Allemand, group leader at the Institute de Myology, Institute of Myology in Paris, France. Welcome, Valerie.
Thank you. Hi.
We're going to talk today about your paper, and I'll remind our listeners there's a link to the abstract of this paper on our website, a paper called Satellite Cell Loss and Impaired Muscle Regeneration in Selenoprotein N Deficiency. So, Valerie, could we start maybe with satellite cells? What are they and what role do they play in muscle?
Satellite cells are mononucleated cells. They are basically myoblasts, muscle progenitors, and they sit in the myofibers underneath the basal lamina. So they are not part of the myofiber, but they are resident cells that stay there in a quiescent state until they're needed, pretty much.
So they don't play any role in the contraction of the fibers, for example, but they play a role waiting until they're called into duty, I guess.
Yes, and they are being activated upon different stimuli, such as a muscle injury, for example, when they are then activated and they proliferate, and a portion of those cells then fuse with the damaged myofibers to recreate muscle.
So this is the part of the process we call regeneration. So they're important in regeneration. So that's part of your title. Selenoprotein. What is a selenoprotein?
A selenoprotein is a family of proteins which contains many constituents. There are several members of that family of proteins. And they are very unique in the sense that one of their amino acids, which is a component of these peptides, is a selenocysteine, which is a modified cysteine, if you will.
So just a reminder to our listeners, we often use this, remind them that a gene, of course, is sort of a blueprint for a protein, and a protein is made up of this chain of individual amino acids. So this is where one amino acid is a selenocysteine, not a common amino acid the way we usually think of amino acids, isn't that right?
No, it's not a common amino acid, and it is incorporated in the selenoprotein as it is being synthesized by the cells. So the gene is transcribed into the RNA that is then translated into this protein. And as translation occurs at a very specific codon, which is a set of three nucleotides, this codon is a UGA. And it is, in a normal situation, it would be identified as a stop stimulus for the synthesis of the protein. But in the context of the selenoprotein genes, there are elements, including in the 3' untranslated region of the gene, that can alter or recode or allow the recoding of this codon to incorporate a selenocysteine.
So the translational machinery, instead of falling apart like a stop codon usually does, inserts this selenocysteine.
Yes.
And I know that members of this family are often identified by these elements you describe, for example. The presence of these elements have allowed us to define the gene in a way. What do we know about selenoprotein N before your paper, or in general? What does selenoprotein N do?
Well, the this gene was identified by a French group in silico, just by computer or bioinformatic analysis, and it was identified as a new member of the selenoprotein family just by its analogy to other selenoproteins that were already known and identified. And in 2001, the group led by Pascal Quichenet at the Institute of Myology linked the selenoprotein N gene or SEPN1 gene to a neuromuscular disorder called rigid spine muscular dystrophy, which is a type of congenital muscular dystrophy. And that was very intriguing, but at the same time interesting, because it is the first and to date still the only selenoprotein member that is that causes a muscular dystrophy or a genetic disorder.
So this congenital muscular dystrophy, rigid spine muscular dystrophy, you mentioned. Now the gene Asensin, I know, been associated with several different types of muscular dystrophies or muscle diseases, including about half the cases of multi-minicore disease, congenital myopathy and congenital fiber type disproportion, another unusual kind of congenital myopathy.
Which are now called SEPN1-related myopathies. And so they're recognized as a rather homogeneous group at the clinical level, even though upon examination of the muscle biopsy, you can still find some heterogeneous findings. So not all the biopsies look alike.
And as a clinical group, without looking at the muscles, but at the patients, the things they share in common, what are some of those things that they share?
Most prominently, the patients show axial muscle involvement, muscle weakness, and also contractures, which limit the movement, and especially rigid spine, so a rigidity of the spine.
Well, that sort of background brings us actually to your paper, in which you studied muscle in selenoprotein N deficient mice. Which now makes a model, of course, for the human disease in a way. And you studied it particularly in response to injury. What did you find?
So the animal model that we used is a mouse model, which is the first mammalian model for selenoprotein N deficiency. And this animal model was created by a French group from Strasbourg, the group of Alain Lescure, in which they inactivated the SEPN1 gene. And we looked at the expression of selenoprotein N in control or wild-type animals and also in this animal model, which I'll call the SEPN1 knockout mice from now on. And the first thing that we found is that if you impose an injury on wild-type muscle, the expression of selenoprotein N is greatly increased. So selenoprotein N has been shown to be expressed at high levels during development and also in cultured myoblasts, which are the muscle progenitors. But as myoblasts in culture or muscle in vivo develops and matures, the expression of selenoprotein N decreases.
So it's normally there in the development, the earliest phases, but then you don't see it anymore in mature muscle.
Absolutely. But if you induce injury in normal muscle, the expression of selenoprotein N is increased.
So it's turned back on by
yes.
some injury. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And this is in normal mice that you see this happen.
Yes.
Right. And then what happens if you do injuries like this in mice without selenoprotein?
Well, first of all, the intriguing thing, and one of the questions that our finding raises upon induction of the of injury in normal muscle, is what are the cells that are actually producing selenoprotein N? Because if you impose this injury, and we use the drug called cardiotoxin that wipes out all of the myofibers in the muscle, then you have no muscle fiber left. You activate the satellite cells. They are reactivated. So are these the cells that are expressing selenoprotein N, or are also all of the other types of cells that are present when there is an injury, are those the ones that are responsible for the increased expression of selenoprotein N? So we first investigated which type of cells did re-express selenoprotein N, and we found that satellite cells do express selen or selenoprotein N. And so that's interesting because of their contribution to the restoration of muscle upon injury. So in the SEPN1 knockout mice, if you do the injury once, you get some level of muscle restoration. But it is imperfect in the sense that the reconstituted muscle is still very invaded, very much invaded by adipocytes as well, and the fibers are calcified. So it is abnormal muscle histologically.
Okay. But it mostly recovers to some degree, is that right?
It recovers to some degree,
yes. I see. Yeah.
But if on the same muscle you induce another injury, then it does not recover at all.
Ah, so you can do these multiple injuries to a normal muscle with normal selenoprotein, and it will go through continued cycles of recovery.
Yes.
But with selenoprotein absence, you get one round of imperfect regeneration, and then that's it. Is that?
That's correct, yeah. And so the question behind that is, is it because the satellite cells die? Are they not there anymore to recover a second time or a third time? I mean, we cannot do a third experiment, but if we could, you know, would we see a loss of the satellite cells? Would that loss be progressive or not? And what we found is that in the muscle from the SEPN1 knockout mice, already at the basal level, meaning in non-injured muscle, the numbers of satellite cells were reduced. And after two rounds of, and that's the reason why the restoration of the muscle after the cardiotoxin injury is so imperfect and does not happen after two rounds of regeneration.
Well, then you went back to human patient muscle biopsies, and what did you find there?
So when we looked at muscle biopsies from patients with the different conditions that are linked to mutations in the SEPN1 gene, interestingly, we found that young patients as well as older patients did, in fact, have reduced number of satellite cells. So that's a very important point because it's, first of all, it proves that the mouse model that we've used in that respect recapitulates the human condition. So it's a very important tool to use for studies on selenoprotein N and the associated conditions. But also one of the findings that we found is that your elder patients or older patients have even more reduced number of satellite cells than younger ones. So it looks like the depletion in the satellite cells might be progressive.
I see.
Which makes sense with the injuries that muscles sustain during lifetime.
And do you think, you know, one of the other features in the clinic when we lump these diseases together in some way, one of the features that strikes me is that many of the patients have very thin muscles, very atrophic muscles overall. Do you think that this could be related in any way to that? Or is there a mechanism by which satellite cell degeneration or impairment could be related to that?
Well, there are two phases in muscle growth that can relate to that topic. First of all, early on, muscle growth in the patients, because they have a reduced number of satellite cells, might indeed be lower. And so the early onset atrophy that's seen in the patients could probably only partly be explained by the reduced pool of satellite cells. But also as the disease progresses, the depletion of the satellite cell pool might also be responsible for lack of regeneration of the muscle upon injury, and clearly that can also explain that atrophy that's seen later on in life as well.
Do you think these results certainly seem to suggest a place for future therapies or a better understanding of one of the effects of selenoprotein, let's say? Are there implications from your point of view for thinking about therapies for patients with these disorders?
Well, one thing that these results certainly do is they They give the first clue as to a physiological function of selenoprotein and in skeletal muscle. Until recently, really, there was no function that had been associated with selenoprotein N. Its function is still quite elusive, but our results definitely put the finger on one of them.
Well, thank you very much for talking to us about your work, your very interesting work, and for explaining patiently a very complicated genetic subject.
Thank you, Kevin.
This podcast is brought to you by Nationwide Children's Hospital. You can find out more about the Muscular Dystrophy Program and ongoing clinical trials at Nationwide Children's at our website, nationwidechildrens.org/muscular-dystrophy-podcast. You'll also find a link to the published abstract of the study we discussed today. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next month.